Don't touch it.
What?
Eyelash on your cheek.
There's an eyelash on my cheek.
She's got...
Okay, we'll do it once more, please.
She's got an eyelash on her cheek, makeup.
Help, I have an eyelash on my cheek.
I don't like to touch these things. You shouldn't got an eye in the middle of your forehead.
Or green skin.
And coming up in this episode, we're back.
We're back!
Hey!
And it's about time. Actually, it's about the death of Doctor Who.
He died. Yes, very sad. 1989.
It's the worst Doctor Who stories of all time. All that and more in this exciting episode of Doctor Who.
The Complete Menagerie.
Almost.
Bonjour!
Ça va?
Zut alors!
C'est un merci!
Non, non!
They're all shrugging like yes, President Gall.
Officially said, up yours, Delors, to Jean-Marc Lefissière.
Yes.
Brexit.
We've gone from Fromage to...
Farage!
It's appalling. It's just ridiculous.
We're laughing because we're all a bit...
shell-shocked.
A bit down about
yeah.
it.
We're recording this the day after the Brexit was announced. And we're all sort of slightly weary-faced. I think we've been looking at Twitter and Facebooks and all sorts of websites and just sort of...
I've been tuning into the radio.
The radio.
Radio 4, James Nockerty's doing a new show. It's called Jimmel Brexit.
Oh, hey! Oh, God, what have we done? Well, I must admit, though, Doctor Who fans won't have voted for Brexit, will they?
Our foreign listeners won't have voted for Brexit either.
Well, there won't be any foreign listeners at this rate. If you're slightly of a darker hue, you'd be out.
We're also going to push the country slightly further north and slightly further away from the rest of Europe. Yeah,
The Doctors were pro Remain, weren't they? That was
apart from Colin Baker.
Is this true? Because I didn't actually look at his Twitter feed.
No, I did. Davo was very strongly because he's
one of the best, isn't he?
He's one of the best human beings we've got going in this country. You know, now Bob Peck's died, which happened recently.
Shoot her!
We should have done. Yes, he was talking about Thatcher, I think.
Peter Davison was kicking off.
Davo was kicking off.
Colin was quiet.
Well, he'd been... because of the obsessive nature of this stuff, it becomes grimly fascinating. It's like reading about the Holocaust. Or I've been reading Solzhenitsyn recently. It's the same sort of thing. The gulags, the
socialist... Gulag archipelago.
That's the one, the gulag archipelago. It seems like a walk in the park about compared to what's happening in this country at the moment. But it's a grim fascination that we have with the details of Brexit. But so I had a look at Colin's... I'd heard that he may be going for Brexit, but he didn't come out and announce it, but he retweeted quite a lot of Brexiteers. And then Terry Malloy, our friend Tez.
Oh, he's a lefty.
He's a lefty and therefore...
extreme.
Well, I don't think it's even...
Red flag-waving loon.
It's not a left-right thing, is it?
He's just a
fucking brain. Well, let me explain my theory on Brexit, and that it's a coalition of the stupid, the evil and the naive, which, you know, that sort of sums us up. But we were
the holy trinity of country.
Yes, exactly.
Vladimir Putin will be licking his lips in glee.
Yes.
Stroking his...
So Davo was in, Colin was out, I think.
Well, Colin got confused because he thought that we were actually... Colin misheard and he thought that we were leaving breakfast. And, of course, instantly...
What's brother and double sausage eggs? Hash browns back in Britain. Bring me my finest crocs.
So he said to the French, no, f*** off.
Oh, no.
That's
Lord.
The truth.
Did any big celebrities come out in favour of Brexit?
No.
Where did Roger Moore stand on it?
Roger Moore is a Tory, but I...
Dignified silence. Ian Botham was very keen.
Roger Moore lives in Switzerland, doesn't he? So,
he does.
Rika Johnson, we're Swiss people. She'll be out. She'll be first out on the boat, on the banana boat, back home to Switzerland, wherever she's from.
Send ABBA back, I say.
Yeah, there'll be no more ABBA Switzerland. Yeah.
So yes, Colin was out, and Sylvester McCoy was an innie.
Was he?
Oh, good.
A brief statement on his Twitter feed that he doesn't manage, saying Sylvester was innie.
I think his belly button is also an innie. I've got
a quick story about Sylvester McCoy, which I'll go into later when we stop obsessing about Brexit. And Paul McGann was an innie. He's quite political. So if you're a Doctor Who fan, you'd be an innie, I think.
What about John Pertwee?
That was the mystery. The mystery of Pertwee.
He's been very quiet since the mid-90s.
Yeah, yeah. No one quite knows what he thinks.
I think he'd have been a Brexit man, actually.
Right.
I think he'd have been out.
Yes, yeah. But he's of a different generation, isn't he?
He was, yeah. Well, a lot of the old folk have screwed us over, really. People will be dead by the time we're reaping the unfortunate consequences of all this.
Well, as Tom Baker said himself, you know, all the silver citizens, who are casting votes, will not see the repercussions of
this. That's what he said.
There will be no more location scouts for future Doctor Who's in Amsterdam or Lanzarote anymore.
That's true.
John Nathan Turner would have definitely been in.
Yeah,
he was in it. Yeah. He was in everything.
he was in a lot.
He was trying to be in everything, wasn't he? So I just made the same joke as you. That worked for me. Sorry, listeners. Yeah. Oh, my little dicky ticker. There'll be no more repeats of Hello, Hello. It'll all have to be remade as Hello, Hello.
Yeah, and all these twats who are over in the enjoying football in France and then having fights and needing to be patched up, they're going to have to pay for that if it happens again.
They're going to have to do it at home.
No free healthcare if you're abroad in these EU countries.
It's dreadful. It's just dreadful.
People don't realise what they've got into. There's a post on the internet yesterday saying that there was a huge surge in Google searches for what the European Union was from the UK after the results came out. How depressing is that?
God. It won't even be Great Britain because there's a Scottish. Well, the Capaldis, the current. We're allowed to talk about it. This is a sort of a dispensation. We're allowed to talk about current Doctor Who because I think it's relevant. But Capaldi is taking the TARDIS and leaving the UK, isn't he? He's going to be the first on board the referendum, and then that'll be it.
The Scots should be out.
We won't have Britain anymore. We'll have just England and Wales mewling and puking into their soup.
Into the nurses' arms.
But going back to Doctor Who, I think this has actually got a huge amount of relevance, and I was stunned, I was surprised, I was predicting Remain was going to clinch it.
Mm.
But then when you start thinking about it, you think, well, look at BBC One on a Saturday night. Look at BBC Two on a Saturday night. Look at ITV at any night of the week, any day, any time on Channel 5. This is the audience. This is who get to vote.
Mm.
You know, and the Doctor Who, the current state of Doctor Who reflects it. And it's got even worse. I'm not suggesting that Doctor Who's got worse, but the state of the mind of the population, which is basically about the intelligence collectively of a jellyfish. they watch this rubbish and they lap it up, don't they?
The whole thing is symptomatic of a wider problem, which has been the dumbing down of society, the dumbing down of culture.
Since 1989?
Well, yes, since the death of Doctor Who. And also, we're going to see more of this. It's going to get uglier before it gets prettier because people are so disenfranchised, I think, with politics. And you have countries like Sweden that are lurching to the right.
Yes, Austria,
like
Austria.
This country, the populace has made a knee-jerk reaction. Yeah, Austria as well. And I don't think we've become far right here, but I think people are being disenfranchised because they're no longer seeing answers on the hard left.
And it's a worrying situation, though, isn't it? It's interesting in the 1980s under Thatcher.
And awful times.
And John Nathan Turner. Yeah. Some of the most creative, subversive television was available.
Not Doctor Who.
Well, I think Doctor Who was quite subversive in the 80s, actually. You look at stories like The Happiness Patrol.
That slid in.
No one was watching.
That slipped in, didn't it? Yes, I think most of it was just.
Edge of Darkness.
Dreadful.
Oh, Edge of Darkness.
Edge of Darkness was a good one, yeah.
This kind of stuff, this gritty stuff. But what we're getting pap and crap now.
We are, yeah. It has to be.
As
Alan
Bennett would say.
Mm. You know,
things are touted as being good, like that thing Tom Hiddleston was in with Hugh Laurie.
Oh,
he wasn't that good.
It was basically
Licensed to Kill.
I watched it because I thought, this is just the sort of thing my stupid friend would like Ian Portnock. He's a lovely man, but he's no intellectual. He reads science fiction.
The Night Porter.
That's got
it was called
Bogard.
Him Night Manager.
Night Manager.
By C.K. Watt.
The Night Porter is the one where Dirko Rogers,
Charlotte
Rampling.
Auschwitz.
She certainly gets her ramplings out.
You see him.
I've never seen that one, actually. I need to throw that one in the
old
DVD.
Cheeks of Dirk Bogart.
It's good. I think the ending is rubbish.
I wanted to say to you, talking about other things that are made in the... Was Threads made in the 80s? Or
yeah, 84.
Because I was interested... I've been checking out Chernobyl recently, and I thought I'd like to watch Threads, finally.
I've got a copy if you want it.
Oh, he died.
I was going to borrow it, but I don't think I need to. I just watched the news, thank you very much. It's all getting to sort of dystopia as we speak.
I ended up sat next to Rhys Dimmesdale Who was in Threads, yes. And he was with his lovely wife, and it was at the West Yorkshire Playhouse, and I couldn't stop myself. I said, oh, I just want to say, Threads, really great. I know it's a long time ago, and he said, it's absolutely fine, because I've just been speaking on Radio Leeds all about Threads.
And you're like, oh, what, you've just bought a new caftan, have you?
And he said, there's a 30th anniversary. Threads, and it's still known. It's still, you know, it's still frightening people.
Have I told you about two Rhys Dinsdale stories? There's two Rhys Dinsdale stories that I've got. One is set at the West Yorkshire Playhouse. Both of them, he comes out in a very poor light. Not, he comes out as a sort of a melancholic figure in my mind.
Problem with the lighting director.
No, no, I remember just being in the bar after a show, and Warren Mitchell, who's sadly dead now. I mean, he's the sort of the prototype racist that they all base themselves on.
Yes.
Farage's hero, Warren Mitchell. Yeah. In real life, he was a...
As Alf Garnett, we should say.
Celebrity racist, Warren Mitchell
in real life was Jewish and very left.
Yes,
very
he was, left. but he was a bit of a... a large personality, wasn't he? He was a big guy in every respect. And I was in the bar of the West Yorkshire Palace. This is many years ago, before Warren Mitchell sadly died. And Rhys Dinsdale was there, and Warren Mitchell was holding forth. I think they'd been in the Death of a Salesman. I don't know. No, it wasn't Death of a Salesman. It was a bit of play. And you could see Rhys. He was just withdrawing into himself like a sort of a disappointed mouse. And Warren Mitchell sort of holding court, as it were. Mm. I felt a pang of shame.
He was upstaged in the bar of a theatre.
Exactly, exactly.
Oh, that's really metatextual.
My second horrible example.
You should have just left.
I went for a day trip to Whitby, and it was about 4 o'clock, and I saw Rhys Dinsdale in Whitby, and it was the day of the television BAFTAs, and I just thought, oh, you bet he's sad that he's in Whitby, not in the glittering London, receiving an award.
He was in that situation comedy with John Thor.
Home to Roost.
What was he? Brexit?
Was he ever in Doctor Who? He wasn't, was he?
No.
He'd been very good, wouldn't he? He'd have been the top.
If I imagine him in my mind's eye, I still think of him as being quite young, you know. But he must be quite, you know, but 50s now.
He'll be in his 50s. He bears an uncanny resemblance to my father, to the point that my dad, in the 80s, used to sign autographs as Rhys Dinsdale.
Does your granddad look like John Thor? Has a dodgy limb, but is married to leftish Sheila Hancock.
Yes, Sheila Hancock was on TV talking about Brexit. Do you see how I brought it full circle,
which we're talking about later in the series, listeners.
Not later today.
No. We don't. But she was very
eloquent.
Yes,
she has a very flat face now.
Well, I think the problem was that she's so well known on for the happiness
she's been
patrol.
Hidden the face with a shawl.
You know, most people think I just went over that one. most people think there's Sheila Hancock. She was in the happiness patrol, didn't they?
Where was Fifi?
In 1988.
I was expecting.
And she's
Fifi.
A bit like Thatcher, so I think she just sort of thought, I just want to erase that in the public's mind. About 30 years of this, of the public, just everyone in the public, Sheila Hancock, yeah. Thatcher, you know, they all just think that.
Yes. Hancock's half hour, that's what they should have called it.
So, yes, it's already depressing, and the doctors all came out against Brexit, but it happened despite the doctor, so it just shows you.
We're trying to chivvy ourselves up, though, aren't we? You know, with the various... it's a consolation, perhaps, that Michael Craze didn't live to see this.
Well, you know, the one thing... I've got some little gifts for you all.
It's got some breakfast gifts.
Brexit-themed. So I just thought, because I actually don't ally myself to this ridiculous notion that we should be away from the European... French bread, there we are.
A white flute. They can't even call it a baguette anymore now that we're out.
I went to the shop to get some nuts, but I thought, no, I'll get the Brexit special. I've got Spanish tapas there.
I've got
Greek olives.
Oh, Greek olives. I like that olive.
Italy's favourite coffee, which is Lavazza. And a few other things. I think that might be... Yeah, I'm in a French brie. So there we go.
Reduced, so, obviously, now, because nobody wants it.
Yes, fuck off. What's 329
now? Send the bugger back, I say.
So, yes.
This is our lunch.
Fuck the lot of them. Fuck Boris Johnson. Fuck Nigel Farage. Mm. I'm European. I'm not British. I'm going to eat foreign muck.
Well, we won't be British for much longer.
Do you know who would be happy today?
Who's that?
Sir William Hartnell would have been doing the dance.
He was a bit of a racist, wasn't he?
He was.
but actually, we've been off for quite a while.
We've got a lot to catch up on.
So there is a couple of things that have been
housekeeping.
Are we allowed to talk about it? Are things that aren't allowed to do with Brexit now?
Yes, but we've had a few adventures in time and space. And
what's happened to you, Sam? You've grown a beard a bit like Noel Edmonds.
The project actually started about 18 months ago.
And who are these people?
Like-minded people, people who actually do not want to see Britain lose the BBC, and that is how serious it is. The
BBC.
But
who are they? I mean, like-minded people, what a lot of, with the greatest of respect, lots of blokes with beards who present afternoon television programmes. What is it, these like-minded people?
This has been picked up on by a few people. I went on a stag do, and there was a lot of drinking that was obviously involved, and I was sat in this room.
And grew a beard. Oh, God, I'm so drunk.
And there's this one guy that was so drunk that he sat there for an hour just going, Noel Edmonds, Noel Edmonds. And by the end, I wanted to hit him.
No,
so I shaved the beard off, but I've grown it back since.
Are you currently paying the television licence fee?
I don't have a TV licence, no.
Was that because you don't have a television?
I don't watch, except on catch-up.
OK.
I had the company of Mr. Samuel Payne for a day whilst he was down in London getting a new pair of shoes.
They don't sell them up here.
No. So we went to Ealing, which is where, of course, they filmed outside Marks and Spencer in 1969, the rock and roll years. Spearhead from Spain.
Oh. We're not allowed to call it anymore. The Outons.
Where the Outons burst out of the window and all the shop window dummies came to life. Mm. And Nicholas Courtney has that very famous line, "Shoot her!" Oh, no, that's Bob Peck.
He says, get on to the policeman, which always made me laugh because it sounded singular.
Just give this French brie a whiff. Just smell that.
Ooh.
You can see that's why that's on offer. So it's gone off.
That's the continent right there.
It smells like a French supermarket.
We saw a few other locations, didn't we?
Yes.
We saw the location of your favourite Doctor Who story, or at least one of your favourites.
Yes.
Top five.
Yes, it's definitely my top five. Doctor Who and the Remembrance of the Daleks.
I remember that one.
And we were walking around. What's the actual location? Walking around.
Waterloo. Yeah, it's Southwark Way.
Which is one of the few Doctor Who locations that has not changed.
Well, very little.
Remembrance of the Daleks, I'm backlist
yes.
And we went into the bar at the end of this location.
Yes.
Which, obviously, Sylvester McCoy had been in, because on the wall,
there's a picture of
Sylvester McCoy. Well,
that's similar to when we were in the pub in. Where was it? The pub with Tom Baker on the wall.
Yes,
the
Fleur de Lis. In East Hadbourne. But this one, this location, was bottom of Windmill Walk. So if listeners fancy a trip to Southwark, and the easy way to find it is it's right at the bottom of Windmill Walk when it joins the Cut. So it's you can see, if you sit outside, the Old Vic.
Yeah, the Old Vic. That's
so if you're going to the Old Vic and you fancy a pint,
we were there for about a whole week a couple of years ago, and we didn't even go there. I didn't realise how stupid it was.
No, I didn't realise that either. We went to see Ray Fiennes, the master builder.
Yeah, that was very good. And the
we sat and deliberately pretended to be stupid people by saying, "Oh, look, it's him out of James Bond!
It's him out of Rising Damp!"
Look, Mr. James.
And I wore a Support the Junior Doctor's T-shirt and got tipped a wink by a rather comely young lady.
Oh, yes.
Mm, not good.
We also popped into the florists that's featured
Survival.
In Survival. It's a florist now. It used to be a news agent, but we found out a nugget of information, didn't we, Greg?
We popped in.
Spoke to a very unfriendly floral assistant that got the cut of our jib immediately as a bunch of saddos that were asking what the location was
for. But she went to go and ask somebody else, though, didn't she?
The senior person who owned the shop, who said, back in 1989, the shop was actually empty. So before I took tenancy of it, they decorated it as a news agent.
Well, you said, how long have you been here for? She said, it must have been late 80s. It was empty. I think I acquired it in 1989. And we just looked for it.
Marvellous. I thought you were going to say, I got here about 9:30.
And then we went into the pub next door, didn't we? Which is the court, the something court. The Drayton Court?
Drayton Arms.
Drayton Arms. and the, which actually features in Survival as well. It's where Ace is having a bit of lemonade as she's sitting outside.
She is.
And we went in, and as we were ordering a pint, Samuel Payne said to the very attractive, actually, young bar lady, did you know, in 1989, they filmed Doctor Who here? And she was very enthusiastic about this news, wasn't she? She said, oh, I didn't know that. And there was a young man at the end of the bar who piped up and said, yeah, it was Survival. Yeah, I knew that.
Seen them all.
And then he was only about 22, wasn't he?
He was a very nice man. And then we dug out the Daypole figure.
Right.
And had some fun with that. And that caught the attention of a few people.
That noise you can hear is just the
it's a location well worth going to. And something I found out, and I believe this to be the case, the interiors of the shop were not shot inside the florist.
No, they weren't. They were mistaken.
They were probably shot at the end of the terrace where there is actually a real supermarket.
Yes.
Which seems to be much larger.
Yes, which is called the Terrace Dicks.
Well, it sounds like I missed out, but I mean, you know, this pales into insignificance, your stories, with mine. Mm. About Sylvester McCoy, who I met!
Whoa!
No.
Was he in a wheelchair?
He wasn't. Do you want me to tell the story? Are you ready? Are you sitting down?
Mm. I'm sitting down.
This is, you know, listeners will be listening all over the world thinking, Tom must be some sort of genius to have met Sylvester McCoy. I know it only takes to sort of go to an event and things, but I just met him in the street. Well, I say the street, I've just been to the South Bank Centre in London for a conference.
Did you drop a pound coin into his cup?
No, he did look a bit. He did look a bit that way.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, my God, that's very kind of you. No, and I just had a meeting at the South Bank Centre, had a conference and stuff. I was just about to bob for a beer before my train went, and who should I see but the man himself, Sylvester McCoy. My heart...
Doctor Who?
Well, Doctor Who, yeah.
The seventh Doctor
Who. The seventh Doctor Who, and my heart... I just couldn't believe it. I think I walked past...
Was he in the question mark jumper?
He wasn't, no. He was dressed as Sylvester McCoy, which is a sort of his costume, not to who, but
it's not
slightly,
far off, is it?
Slightly threadbare. and those glasses on strings that he has. I just walked past, and I think I went a couple of steps and thought, I'll leave him to it. I thought, oh, no, fuck it. Fuck it. This guy has given me joy for the best part of 25 years.
He's pleasured you so
He's
often.
He's pleasured me so often. He deserved to know it, but I didn't. He was with I took to be his son and his grandson. So I thought, well, I can't really. And he was actually carrying a chair, which at his grand age is slightly difficult.
What sort of chair was it? Like an armchair?
A commode?
It was a Chesterfield.
Was it a commode?
It wasn't a commode, no. It was sort of a cafe chair. And he was about to have a coffee. So I just went up to him and said, are you Sylvester McCoy? Which he must guess a lot, because he is.
And he didn't say, did you know you're Sylvester McCoy?
Are you Peter Davis?
You're my seventh favourite Doctor Who.
No, he said yes. And I said, I just want to say, I think you're brilliant, and thank you. And I shook his hand and left, because he wasn't really in the mood for a selfie or a lunge for an autograph. And I think the story is enough, really.
Did he smile? Was he happy?
Oh, he was sort of polite, and he wasn't. He was like, oh, did a bit of one of those, and that was it. And I my heart was beating like a railway.
That's lully. But you met him before, though, didn't you, in 1991 or something?
Yes, in 90 or 91, when he was he was autographing copies of Absalom Dark, Dalek Killer, which was sort of a spin-off from the Doctor Who magazine, which we'll talk about later, actually. And I left him to it, and I texted you lads, and I was like, I've just seen Sylvester McCoy, and it was all very exciting.
It was.
Went off for... I think I went to the National Theatre bookshop, see if I could buy a book there. Couldn't see anything there. I thought, actually, I want to go back to Foyles, where he was, near where he was. There's a bookshop near there. So I went back. He was there again. He was still there, having a coffee. So I sort of thought, can I get a photo? It didn't work. So I went back into Foyles, bought a book in Foyles. And he was still there!
So I saw him
three times in the space of about 45 minutes. Mm. But the third time, he'd fallen asleep.
Oh,
he was resting his hand on his walking stick. The 30-ish old man... Old man, 30-ish man was on his phone. The kid was on his Tamagotchi, I think it was. And Syl was just sitting in the sunshine with his leaning on his stick, completely asleep. I thought he might have died.
It's like Dirk Bogarde in Death.
That would have been the opportune moment for you to have actually got a selfie with him.
Yeah, it would have been, but I just thought...
With my action hero, Sylvester McCoy.
So I saw him three times. So it thrilled me, because, you know, you can meet all these guys in conventions, or you can go to signings that you can pay £10 to have your to have your
butt cheeks signed by
Colin Baker.
But James,
when you meet them in the street, that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's it's a chance meeting.
Television, you know. It's special, isn't it?
Yeah, bless him. I didn't really let him say anything. I just sort of mug it off.
I mean, you never forget these things. I remember about 10 years ago walking down New Oxford Street on my way further into town, and a taxi cab pulled over on the side of the pavement, and a very flustered young man got out of it and ran towards a hole in the wall to draw some cash out. Very nearly ran straight into me and sort of kind of did shove me a little and then apologised and moved on. It was Sean Pertwee. You know, you don't forget those sorts of things.
No.
I never actually met Sean Pertwee. I can't say I met Sean Pertwee, but he did very nearly knock me over on New Oxford Street. I wouldn't have minded at all. Wonderful man.
I met him in Soho, and he was outside with his son, outside a pub. And he was out there for some time having a cigarette, and it was in the pub. Is it called the Two Henchmen? In Soho, round the corner from
Two Chairmen.
Something like that. It's a pub round the corner from the Coach and Horses. And he was outside. So I was quite oiled when I came out. So I thought, I'm going to go have a word with him. And I said, I'm a really big fan. And he put his hand out to shake mine. Oh, thank you so much. With his, you know, his raspy voice. Yeah. And I couldn't resist. And I said, big fan of your dad's as well. And he reached over and he tapped me on the shoulder and said, thank you so much. That's very kind. It's a very nice man.
My husband interviewed him last week. In person, and said he was lovely and really very engaging, and said he had a great time interviewing him.
It was a good egg.
So get on Entertainment Focus where you can see that interview.
No more of that. Endless plugs for that tawdry low rent website that you involved yourself with.
So from Entertainment Focus to entertaining our listeners, do you have a line for us, Greg, to seed?
Yes, I do. This is the line I will seed. "'Tis now the very witching time of night, when churchyards yawn and hell itself breathes out contagion to this world. Now might I drink hot blood and do such bitter business as the day would quake to look on."
Sounds a bit Shakespearean.
Can I just say, Greg delivered that from memory. He wasn't reading that.
That's not Doctor Who at all, is it?
With hand gestures as well.
It's not Macbeth.
Is it Richard III?
No.
One that I haven't read, I suppose.
It's Hamlet. Yeah. But if you want a line from Doctor Who, I'll give you a line from Doctor Who.
Showing off now, isn't it?
I was
very good, though.
So, thank you.
Do you know the whole of Hamlet?
I know the whole of the to be or not to be speech. Would you like a bit of that?
I like their cigars, but that's about it.
Greg, you put the ham into Hamlet.
Hey! Let's have the loin. Let's have the loin. kiss the loin.
He's reading this one. He's shit.
Yeah. Oh, no, you know Shakespeare. You don't know Doctor Who.
Yes, exactly.
Call yourself a fan.
Shakespeare is far more important than Doctor Who.
Did anyone see the Russell T Davis version of Midsummer Night's Dream?
Oh, God.
Was it good? I enjoyed it.
The Russell T Davis version of Shakespeare.
I haven't had a good night's sleep for 4 years, so, at the drop of a hat, I'll be in floods of tears and flapping around like a wet salmon on the floor.
Was it rewritten in his kind of tawdry soap?
Oh, there was about 400 gays, blacks and Jews in there, but, we let that go.
Sounds like a party.
The line is... Oh, sorry, I feel even more depressed than I did about Brexit now. Bloody RTD. "What's he up to now? Something devious and overcomplicated. He'd get dizzy if he tried to walk in a straight line."
That's a good one. One more time?
"What's he up to now? Something devious and overcomplicated. He'd get dizzy if he tried to walk in a straight line."
Is it the Doctor speaking?
No.
Okay, I thought it was Tom
Is
Baker.
Is he speaking about the Doctor?
Actually, no.
Oh, okay. All right. God. This is a toughie.
We'll have to let that one bed in.
Mm. Is it Second Doctor?
No.
Let the left brain work on it while we're doing something else.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot, Greg. That's great.
You're welcome.
And now we're going into the time lash, and we're talking about where it went wrong.
You might want to try that again, Sam. Put your falsies in. Come on.
Now we're going into the time lash, talking about where it all went wrong. We discuss and argue where the seeds of doom were sown.
Oh, but it's all arranged.
Maynard and I have important things to discuss.
Yes, Doctor.
Time lash.
This is great. to be a sort of after post-Brexit blues to say
we're all wrong.
Five seconds, we're miserable enough already. We're going to depress it, all the listeners with our talk of the worst Doctor Who ever.
I have a theory where it went wrong.
I think we all have a theory.
We all have a theory. It's easy to have a theory.
It is. I mean, it tied up very nicely when the whole country started to go deeply, deeply wrong.
Yes, yes. Tell us where that happened.
Well, Thatcher. Thatcher. Thatcher and her male nemesis or
Dennis Chinnery. Dennis Chinnery was married to Thatcher.
Jonathan Turner.
Well, I thought we would have a problem in terms of how we're going to suggest which stories or eras or problems, because we're going to talk about the serials we hate following this as well. And what I brought with me was the usual programme guide.
By Jean Mac
Loffice. No, we're not allowed to mention him anymore. He's been ejected out of the country by John Mark Loffice.
John Mark Loffice.
Officer.
Yeah. And we normally use the 1981 version of the programme guide, which only goes from William Hartnell to the end of the Tom Baker era. But because we're talking about really shit Doctor Who, we've got the complete programme guide, which has the whole John Nathan Turner.
That was the programme guide I had when I was a kid. That brings back memories.
The 1994 new edition.
Well, no, it wasn't the new edition.
I had the old edition, because the TARDIS on the cover was bigger, wasn't it, on the first edition?
It's smaller on the inside.
So it's a sort of an Escher diagram, which used to endlessly fascinate me. You're a teenager if you like Escher.
Yes.
Post
19.
MC Escher. MC Escher, so I like his trousers.
So, we're probably going to touch on the stories we hate in the progress we're going to make into analysing why the show went wrong. But where do we think it went wrong consistently? Because I believe Doctor Who's been very patchy since day one.
Yes.
Yes. I would agree. It all started with William Hartnell. Well, yeah.
Not knowing his life.
When he turned up. In fact, even before the first episode, when they recorded an unearthly child initially, it was a right screw-up. They had to do it again, didn't they?
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's where it all went wrong with that first recording.
So the whole pilot episode.
It's gone downhill from there. Yeah.
Doctor Who was better before they made it on television.
Yes, it was better in our imaginations.
It was better when Bob Holness did it on radio. Oh, no, I mean James Bond.
A glint in Teddy Thomas's eye.
So, which is the first real stinker of Doctor Who? The first real one which is a problem.
That one in the back of the past.
Is it Keys of Marinus, or is the one prior to that?
I've never seen that. You said you were
shit.
Watching that.
Keys of Marinus, actually.
Do you think?
The Keys of Marinus is the centre.
You've never got enough time to see the Keys of Marinus. I think I've never tried it, never will.
I think it's probably the first disappointment, but I don't think it's a real stinker. I think it's watchable.
Well,
Before we go too harsh, can we just preface this conversation with the fact that we do love Doctor Who, and we assume that if you're listening to this, so do you. So I don't want people to get a negative image of us. We're just being a bit critical for
The thing is that there's always peaks and troughs, because William Hartnell, the very first Doctor Who, as played by Richard Herndl.
In the titles it said Doctor, didn't it? Doctor.
Doctor. Oho.
Doctor One, that was it, yeah. First Doctor.
The Doctor One. The first season's very good. The second season is hit and miss, but for some very strong stories like The Crusade, Dalek Invasion of Earth. I love the Romans. There's some awful stories. Now, I might offend somebody here, but the Web Planet is awful. The Space Museum is dull, and I quite like the Time Medal. So it's, and the chase is very silly. So a bit hit and miss the second season. The third season, oh dear, things really do start to go south, don't they? You've got Galaxy 4 is not terribly good.
Dalek's Master Planet is quite
a classic,
and the Massacre's very good.
So actually, you're completely wrong. But we could just go through each season. But the point that you're trying to make, I suppose, in a roundabout way, Sam, is that yes, it's always been hit and miss.
But where does the rot set in?
No, but when does it become more misses than hits? That's my beef. And I think
when does it turn from shits and giggles to giggles and shits?
Yeah, usually about 1 a.m. in my experience, when I should have gone home.
We've universally agreed that the mid 70s is the high point. So let's get over that.
But it's a relatively short amount of time before it goes to south, doesn't it? I think, you know, you all know my beef with Cole Baker, but the rot set in really with... the moment John Nathan Turner strode through Television Centre for the first time, a cataclysmic weather storm happened in the minds of all Doctor Who fans, and it all went south from there. I never liked the man.
No, well, really?
No.
We have never got that impression this podcast before. But look, we've talked about the glory years of the Hinchcliffe era. I mean, John Pertwee, very solid. All of the Doctors have some weak stories. Mm. But John Pertwee's era, generally very solid. Tom Baker comes along, wow, it's amazing. Talons of Weng Chiang, and then we go into the Graham Williams era, and it's a massive sudden shift.
Not as bad as maybe the previous episode. I was kind of being a bit down on the Graham Williams era, but it was still Tom Baker. It was still marvellous.
An interesting point is talking about John Nathan Turner. John Nathan Turner comes on board on the programme wholesale.
Came on board
at the beginning of the Graham Williams era.
Really?
He is production unit manager, which is essentially executive producer and somewhat of an assistant director role. It's a bit of a mashup.
Yes.
So his creative influence is very much on board at that point. He was
John
the money
Nathan
man.
Turner or the Mara, as I know. No.
He was also on
time, all taking creatures. Over the bodies of.
As he was on all creatures
in the form of a snake.
Yes.
He was on all creatures and on many other people as well.
He was. No, he did work on all creatures. I think as assistant floor manager or something of that capacity.
My beef with him necessarily is that I don't think he had a very good vision of Doctor Who. I think what was incredible, I think, over all the years up until mid Tom Baker here, is that the people that took over the production of it had really, really solid ideas of what it should be, and they kept changing. Mm. Now, I sometimes think at night, what would I do if I were in charge of Doctor Who? And I have these various ideas, but I think it's quite hard to make it new. So I think they just had an amazing run of hits. So when, you know, as you say, Hartnell's third season was pretty going a bit on the skids, but then suddenly someone has this idea, let's regenerate him into Patrick Troughton.
In a slide.
Yes. Was that the first choice of actor?
He had the idea.
Yes, I thought it was Sidney Newman.
He'd gone by then. I think he was Sidney Newman. Yeah.
Anyway, but the point is that along comes Tom Troughton.
Sidney Newman!
Sidney Newman, give me cushing! I want Troughton of cushing in the same room, naked as a day of a farm. I want those pants wailers out. I want greasy, hairy nipples. This is going to be a winner!
You do know he wasn't actually W.C. Craig.
He was.
I don't want any of those goddamn BEMs. I want big tits.
BTs are BEMs, not BEMs.
Sorry, Tom. So,
then, of course, there was plenty of Troughton that wasn't exactly A1. And then let's do it again. Let's bring John Pertwee, but let's put him on Earth. You know, let's completely revolutionise the show. Let's do something entirely different. And of course, just bringing Tom Baker through the door and putting him on screen, because he's such a wonderful actor. Yeah. Well, he's a fruit loop. And the Hinchcliffe stuff, to sort of do pastiches of old movies. Just a run of great ideas.
Yeah.
Barry Letts, and he was a baldy.
But he had a vision. He had a vision.
Nathan Turner, he just never did. He was, but he had a vision, and it was very much about let's celebrate what we used to have in Doctor Who. Mm. So, after season of old monsters coming back, and you know, was it the 20th anniversary when it was just everything was just a rehash of something else?
Yes,
there's one season.
I want to mildly disagree with Tom here, but only mildly. It's really only a technicality. First of all, by way of apology, you can probably hear Tom there pouring beer. Now, you're probably thinking that this is the latest batch of Crowdens.
I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that's Crowdens Comfort.
Yes. Well, this is a new batch that's being brewed. We're onto the secondary fermentation
Crowden
process.
Crowden 2 with a new batch.
We still have a couple of weeks to go before it's drinkable, but we're going to call it Crowdens Conquest. So next time, gentlemen, we're recording it in this room. We will be drinking Crowdens Conquest, but it's not ready yet.
My dreams of conquest!
So we're drinking Coniston Bitter, Bluebird Bitter from the Coniston Brewing Company, which is very nice.
I wonder if we mention Coniston Brewing Company, they might send us a case of ale.
Coniston Brewing Company, the best bitter.
Our listening figures sometimes go up to 10 or 12 people, so,
yeah.
So we've got quite a lot of influence. There's plenty of listeners out there.
Yeah.
So if the Coniston Brewing Company want to send us more beer, I'd very happily advertise them shamelessly on this podcast.
I absolutely would as well. It's a beer I adore.
What was your technicality?
Technicality is, of course, Graham Crowden was in The Horns of Nine,
yes.
Which is great fun. We love Graham Crowden's performance in that, and we love Graham Crowden, but it is the end of the Graham Williams era. It was meant to be Sharda, it wasn't Sharda. That was never made.
What's the technicality?
So he went out on Horns of Nyman. The technicality is that John Nathan Turner then took over as producer.
Yes.
Tom Baker's last season, Tom's performance is a bit weird, isn't it? He's a bit tired.
He's grumpy.
But some of the... Christopher H. Bidmead's script editing skills injects a bit more science into it, but I think the whole thing becomes a little bit dry.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think most of the ideas are quite good. I think even a story that's not terribly well structured, like Megalos, actually has quite a good idea behind it. You then have the casting of Peter Davison, and I think that was inspired casting in the sense that television's Peter Davison coming along addresses the issue of Tom Baker sort of being a bit shagged out.
How do you follow him? Mm-hmm.
And you get someone fresh-faced and young and new and totally different.
Like Palin.
Yes, me. Exactly.
And fresh-faced, young, tiny
actually,
beard.
We're all older now than television's Peter Davison, aren't we?
We all are.
In the law.
I think something we're missing, though, is we can't just blame the producer. I think the strength of a lot of this, the good Doctor Who, comes from a very good script editor.
Sure.
Yeah. And I can't help thinking that Anthony Reed wasn't the best.
Right.
And this is the Graham Williams era, which is crossing over, leaving Bob Holmes behind.
He died.
And he did. He's dead, Miss Babs. Anthony Reed's stories, none of them really sing to me.
No.
And neither do the
production
values.
Musicals.
That was the main problem.
Much to the chagrin of John Tommy.
It's the invasion of time! It's the invasion of time!
Do you know John Nathan Turner wanted to do a musical episode of Doctor Who?
That does not surprise me.
But he made Trial of a Time Lord instead.
But after the casting of Peter Davison, there was no good decisions in Doctor Who. The companions, they were all wrong.
The companions
Colin Baker
were
all wrong. And it was only towards the end that
We'll talk more about this on our Tom Baker special part 3.
Which is the finale of the season.
But it was, there were... Oh, God, Peter Davison's very good. But the whole of the Peter Davison era, apart from Caves of Androzani, is very... It's very dry. It's rather sterile. It's okay. Some of it's quite entertaining. Some of it's awful. But a lot of it's fairly forgettable. And you don't think that with, like, Seeds of Doom or something that you can watch and it's instantly engaging. I can't quite... I've been thinking about this all week trying to make this point. But in the Peter Davison era, there's not a lot to get your teeth into or get worked up about. It's just not exciting. It's not invigorating storytelling.
But they're neither hits nor misses. They're just sort of...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They're all sort of 2 out of 5, 2.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
But they're not dreadful. They're not bad,
There's one or two. But then you get up to Caves of Androzani and you had a brilliant young director who brought a bit of a cinematic quality, but they brought back Bob Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's drama on screen. It's actually dramatic for a change, as opposed to things just happening,
exactly.
Which is what Doctor Who feels like in that period.
Absolutely, and because Bob hadn't written for Doctor Who for a while up to that point. I can't remember the last story he contributed. Was it The Sunmakers?
Probably.
Maybe.
Oh, no, it wasn't. It was Rebus Operation, I believe.
The Sunmakers came after that, didn't it? Oh, no! Rebus Operation.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right.
The
Key to
Time.
Key to Time era. Yes. Didn't he also write Power of Crawl?
Oh, he did. Yeah,
so maybe it was Power of Crawl.
It was on the skids then, maybe.
Yeah. Which is not his best, but nevertheless, he came back invigorated, didn't he? And delivers this set of scripts. He's writing. Always you've got this checklist with JNT stories, haven't you? With big ideas, rather than just trusting writers to come up with stories. But Bob Holmes had a checklist. You've got to write out Peter Davison's Doctor and all the rest of it. But he really delivered, and it's a great story, and it's compelling, and there's emotion in it, there's depth.
Mm.
And like you were saying, Sam, it's not just things happening, it's well constructed.
Is it also, there's the 80s, Maybe we're being too harsh, but it seems like the cheapness, you couldn't get away with the cheapness anymore. Mm. When it was black and white, you'd get with the cheapness. Mm-hmm. I suppose with John Pertwee, they had the cheapness was sort of sorted out by having it all on Earth, so I think it was cheaper to do that way, less alien planets. And then in Tom Baker's era, it just got a little bit cheap, but you still had Tom, and then when it became very white, very bright studios, Peter Davison in a ridiculous costume, his companions who you just cross the street to avoid if you knew them. So, so a lot of the stuff that was always bad about Doctor Who that you could kind of take the piss out of just became too bad. It's like, well, if nothing's going right, and I love Peter Davison, but it just wasn't as engaging as he could be.
There's a problem with the direction as well in certainly the early 1980s. Mm. With one or two notable exceptions, I think Graham Harper's very good. I think Matthew Robinson is very good. I think Peter Grimwade is better than average. I think Peter Grimwade actually isn't as good as those other two, but he's better than average. And so it's all very stilted. So in the 70s, the direction tended to be fairly good and fluid and moving, and it's interesting, and there are directors who are engaged in the actual story, whereas in the early 80s, certainly the Peter Davison era, a lot of the direction is awful. You've just got people standing around.
I think a lot of this comes from John Nathan Turner being a technical guy, booking in directors he knew would deliver on time. Financially, Doctor Who was running, you know, on gas at that time, as opposed to on the petrol that was in the mid-70s.
Yeah.
You know, the increase of inflation and everything else made Doctor Who the cheapest budget that was available for them. So he was very much reliant on getting directors in that could deliver within a very short schedule, very quickly, and get it done. Because the first director, I think, that John Nathan Turner hired, Lovett Bickford, was a very creative director.
Yes, indeed.
But he went over budget and didn't get the show finished on time.
Who was that? What studio?
The Leisure Hive.
Which did look very nice.
And that had something going for it. It felt very stylistic and fluid, yes, but it starts to slow down. Mm. And when you get Ron Jones in, who delivers on time, you go back to him because he's safe hands.
I mean, it's spending money in the wrong way, isn't
moribund.
It?
Moribund. Creatively moribund.
It's arid. Dry. Yeah,
because, he just deracinates the whole of Doctor Who.
That's a very good word. What was
it? It means to uproot.
The deracination of the Daleks.
Should we start using flash words? It was moribund.
Yes, I like moribund. Deracinate.
Will Self's coming as a guest.
No, Will Self, I think he writes like a six-form essay and then goes on thesaurus.com and changes all the words and then reads it out.
But I like him a lot. I like him a lot.
So are we saying it's just John Nathan Turner was immortal?
Well, I think you've got to lay it. It's like he was the Thatcher of the era.
I mean, look, you know, it's Tony Blair and himself.
By the time this goes out, he'll be in prison.
Yeah.
That awful
Chilcot.
Man. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
He'll be in a woman's prison.
With Keith Barron.
Pitch it. Make it! I want it! Get it on the telly now!
Keith Barron! Don't be Barron! If only Sidney Newman had lived.
Get him out of his duty-free contract! We want Barron! But going back to the subject,
Jacob. No.
if you look at
you've seen Tango, we're going to do it again. This time with Tony Blair.
See Louise Jameson's tit. You do. I think both actually.
I think it's worth watching every episode of Tango just to cop an eye full of that.
But if you look at the later McCoy era, you've got directors like Michael Waring who are starting to do interesting things again. There are others, Andrew Morgan. Starting to do interesting things, and again they're doing interesting things on a limited budget. They haven't got more to spend, but this is a way of putting the best use of your money. You know, it's not about, well, this guy delivers on time, so we'll get Ron Jones back for the sixth time.
Yeah.
It's about trying out new directors who've got new ideas, who have a bit of visual flair.
Especially younger, I suppose, if they're less experienced, you can pay them less.
And this is what John Nathan Turner used to do, though. I think he used to hire inexperienced writers, young writers, directors who could just deliver. And he was good at stunt casting, I'll give him that, but not really solid, tried and tested writers, which is what you used to get in the mid-70s. They'd have come off, I don't know, doing an episode of Space 1999 or something like that, something of the time, and then they could do a Doctor Who, then they'd do
Jane Baker.
Pip and Jane Baker. actually they delivered stories.
Yeah.
And they worked as stories. They may be a bit naff, but they worked. Some Doctor Who stories don't make any fucking sense in the early 80s.
I mean, there was a long run of not very good script editors on Doctor Who. You had brilliant people like Bob Holmes, Terry Dix. You had...
Pinter?
Yes, Harold Pinter, Douglas Adams. Then the lesser ones, Anthony Reed, Christopher H. Bidmead, and then Eric Saward. Now, Eric Saward was a great admirer of Bob Holmes's. He was something like a disciple, wasn't he, of Bob Holmes, and he wanted to be Bob Holmes.
He looks
was
like
inspired
a Doctor Who monster now,
Holmes.
Doesn't he?
He's got a double cleft chin, yeah, which is quite an achievement.
When you see him on those DVDs.
Like a hot cross bun.
He looks like a prosthetic creature.
And that hair! It's a pudding bowl haircut.
I mean, he does yeah.
It's a shame, because actually he was quite a handsome man back in the day, you know. I'd have been in there like a shot.
Yes.
But now he looks like John Prescott.
Yeah. I should imagine Colin's laughing now.
Yeah.
Because I think Colin is probably less ugly than Eric Saward.
Yeah. Colin Baker.
Yeah.
He's laughing because of Brexit. I hope you're listening, Colin. I hope you're happy now with your ruined country.
Yeah, bloody Colin Baker. He ruined Doctor Who and now he's ruined the UK.
I think, you know, the rot has set in far before Colin. He was a symptom rather than anything. But
let's get back onto this. So, television's Peter Davison and I used to like a lot. I love Caves of Androzani, but a lot of it's fairly mediocre, isn't it?
Flat is the word I would use.
So the new big idea was to... Peter Davison left after three seasons because even he didn't think it was very good, and he went on to make a very peculiar practice, which is very good television.
Crown.
Graham Crown, David Chatton, written by Andrew Davis.
He went on to write Pride and Prejudice, the wet shirt competition, wet t-shirt.
Yeah, he's done all right for himself.
Jane Austen did the novelisation.
Yes,
it's not as good.
Yes, yeah. Pip and Jane Austen was in the writing duo.
So it all went tits up, really, didn't it? I mean, it had gone... dry, I think. Late Tom Baker era, whole of the Peter Davison era, bar Caves of Androzani's, dry, mediocre.
Dry.
Dry. But it then goes downhill further.
Too small, dry show.
We as the Menagerie have long established that we agree that it got better. Thank towards you. The end, and it was its height when it was cancelled. So I think that's not in question.
But we
that's
can't.
The myth that we're creating.
Doctor Who almost is like a question mark, doesn't it? It's sort of plateaus,
yes.
And then it's really shit. And then
it goes up again.
It's like a horseshoe. It's like a horseshoe. But I don't think we can really discount, we have to discount, I should say, the last season, because it's like doing a really shit 3 years at university and then delivering a decent dissertation. You still failed. So, Jonathan Turner. Really, discounting the last year.
Crammed for the final.
Well, that's the last 2 years. He didn't do it. He wasn't involved by the...
That was Andrew Cartmell came in and he was giving up and he was drunk by the end. So we're agreed, really. It's definitely the Jonathan Turner is a downward slip. But were things on the skids, Tom, before Jonathan Turner got the seat?
Before the actual... before he was the producer role, yes. Because I think after the Hinchcliffe era, that was it for good ideas. And Douglas Adams, bless him, you know, lovely man and a brilliant writer. And we discussed this in the previous episode. But it just wasn't right for Doctor Who.
So we're thinking possibly by episode 3 of Creatures from the Pit.
Possibly.
Do you know what Douglas Adams' finest achievement was? Having The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, dedicated to him.
Ah, yes, good for him.
Dedicated to the memory of Douglas Adams.
There's a line, isn't there, in that book where it says, Douglas, I miss you. Yeah. Which is quite, it's quite a beautiful little scene.
Actually, I need to look up Richard Dawkins to see. I've been, last night I was with the baby and I was thinking, oh, God, it's boring, it's waking me up, I'll just have a look at Twitter. I was suddenly thinking, what disappointed celebrity can I look up now? Obviously, all the celebrities are pro-remain, like any sane, rational person. Mark Gatiss, I'll have a look at him, and he was very upset. Oh, Kathleen Moran, let's look at her, she's very upset. Great, this is marvellous, Schadenfreude. But I should look up Richard Dawkins, because he'd be very upset.
Well, I know what he tweeted about.
What did he say?
He said, Why on earth am I being given this opportunity to vote? I'm not an economist. We elect MPs to make these sorts of decisions for us.
It's a very long tweet. Doing the rounds, that's opinion. But the sad fact was that we shouldn't give anyone control over anything. Democracy, basically. There must be a Doctor Who story where democracy is revealed to be a sham.
The Curse of Peladon.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's the about EU. Brexit, isn't it?
There are a few, actually, aren't there? I mean, I'm trying to think now where there are some, interesting ideas, I think, about democracy.
We talk about how great democracy is, but if we had true democracy, then we'd bring back hanging.
Well, we have representation of democracy.
We did, and I think that's absolutely fine. When you give all the opinions and the judgments to the masses, then you end up with a terrible...
Hoi polloi.
Yeah, what are they?
Exactly, they are.
They'll sit down and watch The X Factor without spewing out their peanut soup.
Exactly. And sometimes, the problem is that politicians are cowards now, and they don't really stand up for principles very much, do they? They're all populist. They've all become demagogues.
We've drifted.
Yes.
I was trying to get back on track. Sorry, I apologize.
Let's go into the next bit.
Well, there is actually... This is quite exciting because this is a segment, the Time Lash. We've been in the Time Lash before, but we've got a segment within a segment. So, you know, like when you get those oranges and there's an orange within an orange?
Or an egg within an egg.
Okay, we've got a special segment within the Time Lash.
So can you explain... Is it a bit like the TARDIS and Legopolis?
It is.
Interesting as a Legopolis.
Do you know when Colin's like pendulously hanging on a Kirby wire?
Colin's pendulous hanging.
Sexual moment of Doctor Who.
When he's rubbing himself on that big kind of like Jabba-like rock.
with masting tape all around it that's been painted silver. Yeah, that bit.
Well, it's the point where if that cord was to have snapped and he was to have dropped deeper into the Time Lash, he would have dropped into this new segment. Boys, which is called Countdown to Destruction!
Oh my giddy on! Oh crumbs.
A new segment.
Where we're going to list the worst serials in Doctor Who history.
Great fun, right. Okay. So, what I was saying earlier, and this is my idea, and we haven't done it yet, but I think we should write down, on the top of our head, some of us maybe have thought about this, some of us maybe haven't, I haven't given a huge amount of thought, so if we just write down our bottom three.
Greg's already doing it.
There's steam coming out of this pen.
Actually, I am known as the Doctor.
Right, where are we going? We've written down our top three.
Yeah.
It's a tough one, this, because there's a few contenders for the top three.
Well, go on, keep going.
So the top one, the one I would say first, is the worst of the worst.
Worst of the worst. The real stinker, the shitter.
The twin dilemma, you can't get worse than that.
Oh!
High five.
Greg and I together.
I'm going to be missed it out because I think I quite like it. But I need to watch it again. I haven't seen it for so many years. I've said this before. We need to review it on the podcast, I think.
Maybe we should talk about this now because two of us agree.
Can I just, rather than have to watch it again, can I just stick pins in my face?
Well, maybe for the next recording, I'll just watch it on my own.
Can I just have dinner with Nigel Farage in preference to having to watch The Twin Dilemma?
Rogered brutally by Boris Johnson, which is what he's going to do to them.
It's fucking terrible.
What's yours, Tom?
I can't put the bottom, the first one on my list is The Dominators.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
I've never got through it.
Even Patrick Troughton didn't
like it.
I have never got through it.
One of the last things he said before he died was, I don't like The Dominators. It's on video.
I don't like being dominated.
And then he said, and see
I don't like being dominated.
And then he said,
Well, I was going to say, there's an interesting connection between the two stories, which I feel, and this is why they're both failing.
The Dominators, it doesn't have enough Pat Troughton in it to make it entertaining. Mm. He's hardly in it, really.
Yeah.
Whereas The Twin Dilemma has too much Colin. So that's the formula. So that's all you need to know. That's why they're both shit Doctor Who stories. Yeah. The Twin Dilemma has got terrible production values, bad taste, terrible scripting, and just really bad judgment in terms of the violence in it and all that.
Yeah. And one of the most sickening, horrendous performances ever in Doctor Who, which is Colin Baker as the Doctor.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Hashtag not sorry.
Hashtag not sorry. It's fucking awful. He's terrible. You've got Mestor with waggling his hands about, and Colin overacting like hell, and it's directed by Peter Moffat. Horribly, horrible, 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 horrible.
Morris Denham cannot save it, and he's
Denham,
great.
It's
singer.
Hardly a remarkably controversial opinion.
No,
always comes last in all those polls.
It does indeed.
So what's your second?
Time Flight.
Yes, again, I think that would have. I was trying to think of the worst day, but it probably is. But I haven't seen it recently, so I agree with you. Though it's just odd, isn't it?
It's got a very nice first episode.
It's okay.
I mean, it doesn't feel bad in the first episode. It spirals out of control.
It's 2 out of 5 in the first episode, and then it's sort of 1 out of 5 if you have to score it after that.
To say it's written by somebody who knew how to produce Doctor Who for television.
Yeah. Peter Grimwade.
It's woefully ambitious.
Ooh.
And there's no way they could have achieved that.
Peter, if you're listening, what were you thinking?
He's not thinking much now.
Hasn't been thinking much since about 1991.
What was your number two, Simon?
Monster of Peladon.
Number two.
Monster of Peladon? I mean, it's no Curse of Peladon.
It's awful.
It's got John Pertwee in it.
There's not much John Pertwee. It's an awful lot of shambling around corridors with broken costumes. Yes. And it's got that Ice Warrior with the big, expansive head that they rejected in the patch out here, and they got it wandering around.
Is that the one with Agadoo, or is that the one previous one?
Agador.
That's my favourite.
this is
Push my saddle, shake a tree.
It's like black lace and Doctor Who.
I'm always going to say pigs' it is black lace. You're quite right. It is black lace.
It's just terrible. It's a rehash of actually a decent story, but made really boring, stretched over 6 episodes, and nothing happens. And it's not even funny.
Doctor Who has a blue rinse in it.
He does. He's like a granny. Is.
Interestingly, because I very almost put the Monster of Peladon on my list. Very almost. Very almost.
Very well solved.
And I have to say, more recently, we had new neighbours move in. They just park outside our house without asking permission. They've bitched about us to our other neighbours about our trees being too big, and they want them cutting down. I'm thinking, well, it's our garden. Our listeners don't really need to know about my domestic life, but the point being,
you need to be to a Jean boat and get some cones on the road like they did in Bread.
Yeah, exactly.
Carla Lane.
She's dead.
Brown bread.
Yeah. The point being, she's toast now.
Hey.
The live are birds, the dead are birds. The point.
It's almost like it was scripted.
Yeah.
The point being.
It's like, have I got news for you, but less funny?
Yeah.
Come on, Will. Say some funny big word and then get better.
Well, that's it. They threw a housewarming party.
On bread.
My awful new neighbours, they threw a housewarming party.
Right.
So we had what I like to call idiot music. which is music which is pure bass.
Readers or listeners to the podcast may remember a great washing machine story. Yeah. This is a much better anecdote.
So if you, listeners might like Marla, they might like Simon and Garfunkel, they might like proper music, but if they like music that goes boom, 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 boom.
It's the Doctor Who thing.
Let's do it. Our last podcast. Is that the 1981?
Yeah. Anyway, this music.
Somewhere I heard Greg's voice booming from next door. That's my voice.
This music went on from 7 o'clock until 12:30 in the morning. When I went round and knocked on the door, and I said, "Did you know it's 12:30 in the morning?"
He said, would you like me to turn the music down? I said, down, down. I'd rather you turned it off. But prior to that point,
you cannot beat this for bad neighbours. This flat we used to live in a few years ago, we used to live next door to this woman called the Laughing Druggie. She used to stand outside our window smoking drugs and laughing. So we called her the Laughing Druggie. And she once had a party that went on for 36 hours.
What?
But it started at sort of midday on the Saturday and was still going.
Was it a chem
on Sunday
party?
Night? I don't know what was going on. There was a lot of... there was a lot of laranjadol. I don't know what chemsex is.
Google it, Tom.
I don't know.
The things people
do virus
Tom.
Protection. I don't want to.
What?
Hold on, I'll Google it now. Yeah,
you Google it and I'll finish my...
don't. I'm going to. Yeah, you carry on.
You get a picture of Katie Manning coming up.
Don't do an image search. Just get on Wikipedia, that'll have chemsex. But the point about my nose is that I knew I wasn't going to get to sleep, and this noise, this relentless idiot music had been going on for hours, so I thought, what can I do to get myself off? To sleep.
Oh, wait, let me look at it. It's
so I thought I'll put on Monster of Peladon. That's the dullest Doctor Who story. I'll watch that. And actually, I got up to about episode 5 and I was still wide awake, and I was actually watching it and following the story. This has never happened to me before.
Wow.
So I thought, is this as bad as Time Flight? Is this as bad as The Twin Dilemma? And I decided it wasn't. It's still definitely the worst of the worst of the Pertwee era.
Absolutely.
Undoubtedly.
Absolutely.
It's shoddy, it's awful, it's unengaging, it's not even terribly interesting politically. But is it the worst? Does it make my bottom 3? No. Does it make my bottom 10? Yes. But does it make my bottom 3? No.
Big chemsex. I couldn't get onto the internet. I think it's because it's too rude. All I heard was something about your bottom.
What I quite like is the production code for Monster of Peladon is why.
Okay, well, look, my 2 is my 2 minus just the whole of Trial of a Time Lord, which I count, which some people count as Monster, but I'm going to count it as Monster. There's nothing in that that I think is good. I think you like some of it.
We've been there, yeah.
We've been right there. We've been right down that avenue. But no, dreadful.
That's a trump card he's played there. He's got rid of a whole season of
it.
It's gone into room 101.
Out goes Colin, out goes Mel.
Bad!
Yeah.
Bad! Oh, yes, Colin, it is.
I don't think we need to talk about that too much. What's number 3?
The Sensorites.
Oh,
just simply because I can't get through it. I've watched it twice. I watched it when it came out on VHS for the first time. Really struggled to get through it.
I love the book, though. I love the book.
It's 10 years later or whatever it was, when it came out on DVD, I watched it again.
Yeah.
Really struggled to get
through
it.
It is
episode one is okay.
Though, isn't it? Maybe it's too long for the story.
I've never tried it.
Maybe give it a whirl.
So dull.
There's a lot of them I just assume that have been wiped, so I don't bother with it. It's not there, is it? Really?
It has some redeeming elements. I think the production design is very good. Very acoustic. It looks beautiful.
It does.
The aliens are actually very nicely realised.
Episode 1 is actually fairly good, but massively downhill from there. And anything with Ian and Babs in it is always worth watching. But The Sensorites is the one out of the heart there, I really just struggle with that.
Yeah. It's an interesting point. It's not necessarily which are the worst Doctor Who's of all time, but I was thinking about this when I was writing these down. Which are the ones I never want to watch when I want to pick up a Doctor Who? And it's often these selections, because they're boring, and that's the biggest crime for Doctor Who. It has to be under the same remit. It's the web planet, because I can't make my way through it. No. It's so boring.
If you guys can't, God, I'm having no hope, am I? Because, I find even the best ones hard to get through.
Even Martin Jarmer's in it.
The problem is, it's how many episodes is it?
Six.
It's 6. It feels like it's longer.
I'm
not going to mention the story in particular. We talk about it in the next episode. But for this, you may be amazed, listeners, to realise that for this podcast, we actually do some research. My research is just to watch the stuff, and often I haven't seen it before, or I haven't seen it for so many years, I can't remember it. And if you watch episode 1 of any Doctor Who story, whatever era, I think it's like Shakespeare. It's like tuning your brain back into what TV used to be like. Because I don't watch an awful lot. You guys are always watching that. You watch Space 1999 the other day, and you'll watch all sorts of stuff. I don't watch a huge amount of television, and what I do watch, I'll watch with the wife, so therefore it'll be something modern, or a film, or so, you know. Yeah. So I'm not entirely within this world of like 70s or 80s television. So it's just, it's like a whole brain, your brain freezes and you go, what? They've been talking for like 3 minutes and they're still in the same place, you know, or they've not moved the camera or, you know, these sort of things. So it's just about, some of it I think is about the style of television that we, that is harder for us to get our brains into. So that
television in those days, what, it was a bit more like theatre.
It was, yeah, yeah.
This isn't an original point, other people have made it, but you know, if you look at something like the Horns of Nymon, even the way the set is yes. built, you've got wings, you've got actors doing and the wings coming on left and
multiple
right.
Multiple camera, isn't
it? It's always end on.
It's always very theatre, but theatre can be extremely exhilarating and exciting, but less so on screen.
But yes, but I've never watched one of those theatre things on a cinema screen.
It's always about waste of time. Cabbage patch.
It's an interesting point you make there, Tom, though, because I was listening to some commentaries with Peter Davison, and he always does his homework when he comes on. He's always well prepared when he does a commentary.
Doing A-level, is he?
Very, very, very entertaining. But he admitted, he goes, I've got a special button on my DVD player that plays Doctor Who episodes at double the speed. And you know, you don't miss anything.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like watching new TV.
Yes.
And I can believe it, the pace.
We should get Dano in here. He seems like a nice
I'm player. Sure he has the time.
I love Dano.
Let's write him a letter on Venom.
There's one more thing I want to say about the Web Planet, and it was a bit of a watershed moment for me as a Doctor Who fan. Whenever I used to get a Doctor Who VHS tape or whatever from a second-hand shop, where they do all the exchanges for VHS, it was very exciting. I picked up the Web Planet, the double set.
Yes.
Thought, oh, bargain, I've got two videos here. Yeah. And the tradition for me used to be I used to watch it all in one go, and then once I'd finished, I used to watch it again. It was the first time.
Having a Tommy Tank.
Those are the Louise James.
The old rubbing out the old Barclays. It was the first time I couldn't get through it, and I thought either I'm getting too old for this or it's a shit story.
Yeah.
Bit of both.
So you need some televisual Viagra.
It was one of the early ones on VHS.
1990s.
And it was a bit of a stinker even then. I mean, they cherry picked in the early years, didn't they? Because I bought the VHS and thought, wow, this is the most amazing show. Assuming they were all of that quality, but then you get a stinker like Web Planet.
But the reason why they released it, and the reason why people still hold it in, because you know, it's a fond memory, is because of the nostalgia. Because I think, you know, hear Peter Capaldi, let us not speak his name, but he talks about it being one of his favourites because he watched it when he was a kid. And when you're a kid, you're seeing big insects on, you know, talking, you know, that's that, and in your mind, that's much better than it is in reality. So I think people always had a fondness for it. I think the reality is maybe it's pretty dry, but.
I don't think nostalgia can overcome just how dull it is.
Well, talking of nostalgia, my last one for me was Silver Nemesis, which it's a shame to put Silver in there because I do like him. But it was one of the first ones I watched, and because I'd read a lot of the books at the time, I was into the books, and I suddenly started watching it on the television. I think that was the first season I saw any of when I was 10, 9, 88. So yeah, 9 or 10. I just remember being like, I just didn't understand it. Is it the one with Courtney Pine in it?
Yes.
Yeah. Who the fuck is Courtney Pine? And I know who Courtney Pine is, I've seen him live.
My dad knows.
No, I know, but me and your dad share a love of jazz, which is not quite as the same love, really. It's just that your dad foists TV music on you. I never give them back. Who's that fat bloke? What's his name? Stubby K.
Oh, yeah.
I remember reading about this in the magazine saying, oh, Stubby K, who the fuck is he?
Is Dolores Gray?
Yeah, exactly. And you're meant to be excited, and then it's just such a weak, it's so weak, and it's the excitement of it's been the 25th anniversary.
Even Anton Differing had no idea what was going on.
So no one
was indifferent.
Very good.
Actually, we should put him in section 28. He was a homosexual.
Have we mentioned that before?
Probably we have. Yeah. So let's not make
he fleed from Nazi Germany.
Because we've mentioned that before, yes. We're always mentioning Anton Biffin. So there's what, I'm happy to go along with you guys, really, because you know more about it, but the Twin Dynamo always tops the bottom polls, as it were.
We've got a bit of a following now on Twitter. What's your views? What's your favourite worst Doctor Who?
OK, well, if you're listening to this and you've got on Twitter, please don't tell us. I mean, for God's sake.
Anybody has any views on what they think of the worst Doctor Who? Do you think we're right? Do you think we're wrong? Let us know. And, you know, Tom Bailey, CC him in. Tom Bailey leads.
Oh, dear. No, all these... I mean, I'm sure you're very nice people, but please stop talking to me. You know, I've got a life. I'm busy life. I can't be listening to you lot.
Tom's very complex. He has 2 Facebook accounts,
oh, God.
17 Twitter accounts, an Instagram account for his beard and love.
I like to measure my worth by social media.
You measure your what?
My worth by social media. But please do tweet us at DW Menagerie. That's at DW
Menagerie.
Where we'll be measuring what, Tom?
What?
Inside leg measurements.
Oh, yes, yes.
Say every episode.
I did it once about 2 years ago. It still needs to say.
Forgotten all about it.
Well, that was a lovely section, and we're moving out of the countdown to destruction.
Well,
out of the time lash.
Yes.
Colin Baker is walking backwards, arse first, out of the time lash, and now we're going to go straight over to you, Greg, for Guess the Line.
Guess the Line, yes.
You had a line earlier, it was Hamlet, and then you had another line, which we had no idea about.
Yes. What's she up to now? Something devious and overcomplicated.
Roger Moore.
He'd get dizzy if he tried to walk in a straight line.
Yes, yes, that was the best impression of Roger. Now then, I think it's probably Colin Baker's era.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
I have no idea which.
I'm really struggling. Is it Lytton?
Lytton, no.
No?
No.
Somebody in authority.
It's a line by Pip and Jane Baker.
But which story?
Is it the captain in Terror of the Vervoids?
No, it's not Vervoids.
Mark of Rani?
It is Mark of Rani.
Ooh, well done, Tom.
Who's saying it?
Oh, it's not Kate O'Mara, is it? It is Kate O'Mara.
It's Kate O'Mara! Inflection of it, but it's the Rani talking about the master in the Mark of the Rani.
I don't think we can claim any.
Tom, that was incredible good work. I'm really impressed.
No, it's hardly treasure.
Well, from that we're going into the IF, and it's a special JNT one.
Oh, we are doing IF this little segment. We carry on with IF.
We're not doing those shitty quiz books. We're doing our own IF.
I've got an IF.
It's the least popular segment, I'm sure.
No, it's not. It's very popular.
Some people really like it.
Oh,
like
do they?
It. Yeah.
Yeah. So fuck you, Tom.
IF stands for index file.
Okay, so to make it easy, it's multiple choice.
Oh,
hey, yes,
all right.
Okay, here we go. What was John Nathan Turner's real name? Was it A, Nathan Turner? B, John Nathan? C, John Turner? D, Sir Princess Michael of Kent?
You say how long is this going on for? I think it's B.
John Nathan.
Yeah.
C.
Correct, Greg. It is, in fact, John Turner.
Well done.
Question 2. John Nathan Turner was born in A, Birmingham. B, Brussels.
No.
C, Bognor Regis.
Birmingham.
D, Brighton.
Ah, oh. Usually multiple choices have three, don't they? Three options. And this is foxing me with the four. It's very French.
This is what GCSEs are like now. It's so easy for it. Well, actually, they've gone back to 2 choices.
Well, I'm going to go for Brighton, then, D.
I'll go for Birmingham.
Greg again, it's Birmingham.
I was going to say Birmingham, but the fourth choice foxed me.
Question 3.
He died in Brighton.
Oh, yeah. Number 3. What was John Nathan Turner's main tipple? Was it A, a V&T, B, a G&T, C, a white wine soda, D, a large Benedictine chaser with lager. Main tipple.
So, you missed a trick there. You could have said J&T.
That would be onanism.
Yes. Don't put it past me. What was that last one?
That means wanking if you're stupid. A, V&T, B, G&T, C, white wine soda, E, lager with Benedictine chaser.
It's from the Bible, isn't it? The sin of onan. Mm.
C, white wines, V&T.
Greg again has got it right. It's a vodka and tonic.
That's where all this has come from, right?
Number 4. Peter Grimwade stopped directing for J&T because A, he was overheard criticising J&T's taste. B, he didn't invite J&T to a dinner. C, he wouldn't hire Gary Downey as production unit manager. Or D, J&T got him a gig on Casualty.
D. He didn't invite J&T to a luncheon.
Dinner's the same thing up north. That's lunch.
Yeah.
Okay.
So B,
remember
correct.
Your roots.
Remember your roots, Greg.
It's a whitewash. 0.
Oh, come on, Tom. Turn it round. Question 5. When J&T last met Nicola Bryant at a convention, he A, called her a bitch, B, screamed at her, C, spat in her face, D, all of the above.
Ooh, D, all of the above.
D as well.
Both correct. Get a point, Tom.
180.
Question 6. Which of the following did JNT not say? A. Stay tuned. B. Looking back, I think it may have been a touch imperfect. C. Have you ever had two in you? D. I think I've found my new doctor. Or E. None of the above.
Oh, God.
Greg, what do you think?
None of the above.
Greg's correct. Unfortunately, what? He did say, have you ever had two in you to a boy in the BBC bar? Richard Marsden, it's in his book.
Oh, dear.
Isn't that grim? Yeah. Don't worry, we're getting near the end here, Tom.
I'm bad at this great game.
Question 7. It's a cracking good story and has some of the best special effects I've ever seen on television. J&T was talking about A. Remembrance of the Daleks, B. Curses of Fenric, C. Time and the Rani, D. Delta and the Bannermen.
Time and the Rani must be.
I go for Delta and the Bannermen, just to be obtuse.
Greg, you're wrong. Tom, you're right. It is Time and the Rani.
It's so wrong, but it's that's obviously trying to talk it up, isn't it?
JNT's dog was called A. Bonnie, B. Pepsi, C. Ditsy, or D. Trixie.
Pepsi.
I go for Pepsi too.
Both right. Well done, Tom. Well done, Greg. Okay.
It's a crass, asinine thing that John Lethem was called a dog.
It's dead now, Miss Babs.
Pepsi as well.
Pepsi was a very 80s drink, wasn't it? No one drinks Pepsi anymore. It's all, no.
It's all Diet Coke.
It's all Vimto and Diet Coke. Yeah.
I think they drink it in Azerbaijan.
What's the next question?
Question 9. I always felt that people took you very well, that they assumed you were a warm, friendly, funny, likeable, approachable sort of person if you A. shook their hand and hugged them, B. wore a Hawaiian shirt, C. offered them a tipple in the BBC bar, D. had a beard.
Hawaiian shirt.
Beard.
Greg, you're correct. Tom, you're wrong. So, Greg.
Beard.
It was. No, you're shirt. Correct. Hawaiian shirt. I'm
oh,
afraid.
Right, sorry, nice.
Right. So, Greg, and that, you've got 8. Tom, you've got 3. There's no need for the tiebreak, but okay. I'm going to throw the tiebreak out anyway.
Okay.
John Nathan Turner died of what kind of hepatitis? Was it A? A. B. B. C. C. Or D. D.
Marvellous.
B. C. I don't know.
Hepatitis B! So you clawed it back with a final score of 4-8. Well,
very good, Sam.
Yeah, guess what?
We all learned a lot about John.
We have, yes. I've forgotten all of it.
Do we have enough time to do a reminder of what's coming up next week, possibly with a competition group?
Well, we've got the results of our Tony Beckley death competition.
And we're talking about Peter Davison's area. We haven't talked about Peter Davison's area in much detail.
Was he Doctor Who?
He was Doctor Who briefly for between 1963 and 1989.
He was the one that wore leak on his lapel.
That's the one.
He did.
So we'll be going right into his oeuvre.
He used to be married to Sandra Dickinson. Mm-hmm. We've also got another IF coming up, which people will enjoy.
We love the IF.
If you don't agree, you can fuck off.
And we'll just be, you know, trying to cheer up, really, after this whole Brexit debacle.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a downer this episode.
We hope this has revived people's spirits.
I hope so.
Yes. If it hasn't, try not to be downhearted. Just remember that we weren't even in the EU when Tom Baker was cast. When John Pertwee was cast.
Yes.
But we've been in this situation before. We will survive,
yes,
as Cybermen and Gloria Hunniford used to sing.
All that and more in the next exciting episode of
Doctor Who.
The Complete Menagerie.
Almost.
If you enjoyed listening to that twaddle, you can follow us on Twitter at DW Menagerie. That's at DW Menagerie, and we'll be tweeting various photographs of our inside leg measurements and that sort of thing.
Doctor Who is copyright of the BBC. No infringements on copyright are intended. Support Doctor Who by purchasing DVDs and CDs and all other media from the BBC. Any comments made by the Complete Menagerie, almost, are all our own.
You've been listening to a Sixth Floor production.